is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back. And another great, I want to say thank you again to David Riley and Brenda Karkus and Linda Campbell for coming in and talking about the Walk for Hospice.
It was a great segment.
It was a great segment. And you know what? We all get to that point in time with a loved one, whether it's a sibling, whether it's a parent.
The host of a radio show.
Yeah, a co-host. You never know.
A guest.
Yeah. That voice, of course, is a gentleman who has been here before. Mr. Dick Zuccaro, Richard Zuccaro, author of the book, In God We Trust, The Investment Business, Not So Much. And Richard has a background in finance.
Correct.
I believe that you have, one too many times, we have had conversations about certain communities and what their budgets were going towards and how they should be investing, proper ways to invest. First of all, I almost get this as being like a biography, like an autobiography, but yet it's also a tutorial on the things to do and not to do if you're out there looking to invest your money.
Right. The first half is definitely an autobiography about my personal experiences in 30-plus years in the investment business on all sides of the industry. I started off chief of pension investment operations for the state teachers and employees retirement system. Back then it was $5 billion. Now it's $65 billion.
I thought you were going to say you start off the book with a Grateful Dead quote.
Right, right. And it has been a long, strange trip.
Which he actually does. He starts off with a Grateful
and,
Dead
and then
quote.
I went to the money management side of the business. I was a marketer for a global investment firm for 2 years, and I was a pension fund consultant for 15 years with three different firms. And one of my clients was Plymouth County and City of Brockton, where I hail from as well. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I started my own business, an institutional market, a third-party market. So I had the unique opportunity, and the breaks came along at the right time, right place, as they say. I got lucky and quite an experience. And then I started marketing some investment management products to city and town state pension funds all over the country.
Mm. Now, you want to make sure you give a little love to your son, Nick.
Yes, my son actually, for those of you, I mean, too bad we don't have this on iPod, but it's a very creative
cover.
When we put
the podcast up, we'll make sure we take a picture and put it right next to
you. Oh, great. That'd be terrific. So the cover is basically my son personally designed this. It's kind of catchy. And it's a background of Wall Street with the American flag, and then quite colorful. And then you have the cross with Benjamin Franklin on the cross, covered with $100 bills. And I don't mean to be sacrilegious there, but and on top, in the middle of the cross, it's the insignia of the pyramid and the eye over the pyramid. And what that signifies, it's a Latin phrase. And it signifies a one-world order government approved by the majority of the people and one uniform currency as well. And the significance...
Is it coming?
We may see it eventually, yeah, to make things easier for people. You see, Europe did it. Now we'll see what happens. But the significance of that cover, why I have Benjamin Franklin on the cross, is he's atoning for the sins of Wall Street. And you can see the two streets there that intersect Greed Street and Wall Street. And we've seen many a movie about Wall Street, obviously.
We have.
Latest with Leonardo DiCaprio. It was a great movie.
Wolf of Wall Street.
That was a fantastic movie. And not too far.
It was kind of an over-the-top.
Right.
depiction, I think.
It was wild in those days, trust me. Mm. Back in the Bear Stearns day when they played. I comment about that Liar's Poker, where, I mean, they were making millions and millions of dollars. I actually met Ace Greenberg, who ran the bond trading desk for Bear Stearns in New York, Manhattan. I went for an interview, and I'll never forget it. You walk on that trading floor, and there's just a sea of desks as far as you can see, and he's up with all the monitors giving the instructions of selling bonds. And they made millions of dollars, and Michael Milken with the junk bond crisis, you know, the bonds weren't worth the paper they were written on, made hundreds of millions of dollars, and then the rest is history. Went to jail, obviously, for a while, and some fascinating people and stories and places and events that I attended over the 30 years of my career.
Now, from what I understand is that you went from state government to the private sector. Usually, it's the other way around. People will go for they start in the private sector, and before you know it, they find their way into a government job, and it's usually the security
that they need. Right. There's a trade-off, no question about it, but I get involved with the government. Most of all, my relatives work for the government. My dad worked for the federal government for 42 years. He was chief fiscal accounting officer for the VA hospital. My mother worked for the welfare department, and my aunts and uncles, a lot of them worked for the government as well. So it was inbred in me, I guess, and I went to work for the government for 15 years, and then I decided I was the risk taker in the family and went to the private sector. And my father, you know, God rest his soul, he always told me, stick with the state, get your retirement, security, health benefits. But I didn't listen, and I kept doubling my salary every 2 years to the, where I was making well into the six figures.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your strategy for investing? Does it differ for everybody? Do you have to look at someone's financial history? Do you have to look at the snapshot and look where they are as far as debt goes? Maybe what they have for liquidity? Do they have cash on hand?
Right. Well, my expertise actually is in the institutional marketplace. It's quite different than the retail. You're referring to an individual. Individual, you have some great houses out there, the Fidelities, the Dreyfuses, AIG. They'll tailor-make your asset allocation to where you are in your career, how much you make, how much you need for liquidity to pay your bills. Mm. And they'll take an aggressive approach to you when you're young and you got many years to go so you can withstand the volatility in the marketplace. And as you get older, in a window out maybe 3 to 5 years, you want to tone that down, get less volatility and more income-driven products like fixed income bonds, treasuries, municipal bonds, tax exempt. My area of expertise, I was dealing with billions of dollars, and I mean, that's a whole new level. It's a lot of zeros on the end, but I mean,
that's what I've heard.
You're pretty much diversified right across the board. Mm. You get into venture capital, hedge funds, international products across the board. And you can do that as an individual, but through mutual funds. And the SEC mandates that a typical mutual fund needs 25 stocks or more to get diversified. The old adage, as I say in the book, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But that the second part of that book is more designed for someone that wants to consider a career in the pension fund industry and investment business. Tell you the ups, downs, in, outs, highs, lows, salary, structure, marketing versus portfolio management, degrees, licenses you need. And trust me, it takes a toll on you, this business, the institutional marketplace.
Knowing, you know, being in the kind of the public sector in terms of the pension funds in Massachusetts, what's your take on the unfunded liabilities here in Massachusetts?
Well, the average, there are 106 retirement systems in the state of Massachusetts. That includes the two biggest ones, the state teaching employees retirement system. Then you have your cities and towns, and you have your counties, what's left. One time there were 13 counties. I think Governor Weld kind of eliminated a few of them. I think they're down to about maybe 9 now. But the average Massachusetts system, we actually laid the foundation. Back in 1985, we adopted the prudent person investment guidelines. Before, most pension funds in the country, public funds, were pay-as-you-go, and you were restricted to a list of fixed income securities and bank stocks, of all things. Bank stocks were deemed as a very sound investment. Hmm. And then along came the unfunded liability of $12 billion. Massachusetts, people won't realize it, but it is the oldest public pension system in the country because, you know, our founders settled here and it all started here. And we also had the dubious distinction to have an unfunded pension liability of $12 billion. So we went before the legislature, asked them to adopt the prudent person investment guidelines, which means you can diversify right across the board in all asset classes. We adopted an amortization schedule of 40 years, calling for a fully funded system by the year 2028 for all the systems in the state by a combination of employee and employer contributions and investments. Now, the state and most cities and towns will kick in about 2 to 1. The employer kicks in $2 for every dollar the employee kicks in, except for the MBTA. I think they kick in three or four. That's why you have all these people retiring at lucrative pensions at young ages.
Yeah,
it's cash rich.
Sure.
It's funny you mention retirement, because I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, this thing called the 401k came out of nowhere. And at that time, depending on who your employer was, they would give you a nice match. These days, I hear 401k, and you're lucky if you will get a fraction of what they used to offer, and it would be only up to 5 or 10%. It's like that companies will not... You know, will not go to that point.
Well, yeah, times are getting tough, as we all know. And you're right, absolutely, Kevin's right. Before, they were matching maybe 1-for-1, then it went to 50 cents on the dollar and 25 cents on the dollar.
And you'd have to be vested to like 7 years, and then it would all be yours. But there would be a certain amount that you'd be able to have that money as long as you stay with the company for the certain amount,
now,
certain amount of time.
A clear distinction, so your viewers, your listeners, rather, are well-informed. There are two types of pensions.
It's not an outside view.
Actually, Actually, there's defined benefit, which a lot of government agencies have, where it's based on a formula. It's the contributions you put in. Right now, if you were to get hired by a city and town, you would be putting in about 10% of your withholdings of your salary up to the first $30,000 you make. Over $30,000, additional 2%. And then your employer, the state, city, or town, will kick in like double what you're putting in. Now, it's based on your average age. I mean, your average three-year salary. Now they want to bump it up to like average five-year salary. They want to cap it at $90,000 as your maximum you can get to eliminate the bulges out there. You're getting $250,000 a year.
Charlie Lincoln's.
Right. Mm. Yeah, right. So they want to put a cap on it.
And
Right. It's based on your age. Obviously, the older you are, the higher your pension will go. And then your years of experience and your five-year high. But there's three options, too. You can take option A when you retire. Like 80% will go to you, 20% your surviving spouse. Then you take option B, which is more of an equal split, maybe a lesser amount to you, 60%, and 40% when you pass away to your spouse. Or option C, right, you get the least amount, 20%, and then your spouse will get 80%. So there's different options.
Is that the option you're looking at, Kevin?
I'm kind of curious how many actually would. I would see more in the middle or towards,
And depending how many wives you had. But then you have the defined contribution. Now, what's going on in corporate America, including some of the public pension systems, are getting away from defined benefits. That's a set formula. Now, defined contributions is how you invest your own money, and it's almost outside of a match, as Kevin brought up. You're responsible for your investment decisions. They'll give you guidance and bring in a big company like Fidelity's, but, you know, that's it. You eat what you invest and make, and some states are doing that. State of Michigan in 1998, I put in for the CIO, Chief Investment Officer for that state, and there was about probably a $50 billion retirement system. So if you went to work in 1998 for the state of Michigan, you had an option to go on the defined benefit program, which is almost a guaranteed pension or defined contribution. Now, if you have a selected defined contribution, right, you would have got murdered, because then we had the financial crisis, the bubble burst. The S&P returned three straight years of negative returns, which never happened. And those people just saw their savings go right out the window. That happened back in the Great Depression. People actually were jumping out of windows. They lost everything they had.
There were a lot of shenanigans going on, though.
Look at what happened today with Bernie. Bernie Madoff. So, if your listeners get one point out of this, it's long-term investment horizons, right? Diversification accounts for 90% of your return, so don't put all your eggs in one basket, because the risk is way up here. And then a buy and hold, long term, and you'll sustain those volatility periods.
I've always been told, I've talked to many investors, and the one thing that is consistent that I hear is if you're somebody who gets into something, let's say mutual funds,
right,
that's something, it's not a sprint, it's something that's for the long haul, and you're going to see
It's diversified. That's the big difference. Right. Now, believe it or not, today, some investors, I mean, look at the poor people that put 100% of their assets with Bernie Madoff. He was returning good returns year in, year out. He was getting 10%. That's tough to do nowadays, getting 10%. Most pension funds try to strive for their actuarial rate of return, which means the money they need to pay their retirees now and future retirees. So they're lowering the bar now. It went from 8.5 to 8.25. And a good consultant should get you about 100 basis points to 100.5 above your actuarial rate, which is roughly, you know, 9.5%. And your question before, I wanted to bring out most Massachusetts retirement systems about a full 1.5% above their mandated actuarial rate. So they're still financially healthy, right? Their pension funds are funded about 65%. And they've averaged about a 9.5% return since 1985 when they adopted the prudent person investment guidelines, which is a terrific return. Rule of thumb, if you can get 10% on your money, take it right now. Lock it in.
How about a regular IRA as opposed to a Roth IRA? What is your thought on that?
It comes down to, again, your investment horizons, the risk you want to take, tax exemptions. They have college IRAs now, Roth is setting up, which is tax exempt. But once again, who knows what the future holds in the investment markets? And every manager, when they issue you their prospectus or their PPMs, there's always an asterisk in the end that says, past returns are not indicative of future returns.
Mm.
Now, as a consultant, I can sit here and say, Kevin, I'm going to give you 6 different asset allocation scenarios, right? They all have different levels of expected rate of returns and risk. Mm-hmm. So you tell me what you want. Now, the further out you go, the increase in probability that you're going to hit that return. The first year, you might be, you know, down 20%. You're going to say, hey, Dick, what are you doing to me?
What are you doing, Dick?
Right? But I guarantee you, as you go out 25, 30 years, you'll have a 95% chance of hitting that asset allocation target return if it's 9, 10, 12, 15.
Quote from the book.
Yes, sir.
In God We Trust, the investment business, not so much. Courtesy of author Richard Zaccaro, who's in front of us. This is straight out of your book. Life consists not in holding good cards, but in playing those you hold well.
Right. Well, I threw that in there. It sounded good.
actually,
there's a meaning in there. It's with the asset allocation, as I said before. You know, I mean, that's imperative. You got to stick with your asset allocation. Don't time the markets. And the other downside, too, by the way, people have a tendency to try to be overly conservative in their approach. And what happens there is CPI, the Consumer Price Index, or inflation erodes your investment earnings. So when you retire, guess what? You don't have the money to sustain the lifestyle anymore.
Reason why I asked you about between the regular IRA and a Roth, I've been told that the whole Roth IRA thing, where Roth is where you pay your tax, you're paying taxes on money that you're putting away. So when you go to take it out, when it's that time, when it matures, that you don't have to worry about paying taxes or whatever that tax rate is at that time. I've been kind of told that it's kind of a bit of a sham. Do you agree?
Again, my expertise is the institutional market. Remember, they don't pay taxes, public funds. But I would suggest you get a good financial planner. And I do know this, the IRS is always changing the laws when it comes down to IRAs and Roths.
Okay.
So what you think may be tax deductible no longer is.
Mm. Joe, did you have a question?
Well, you know, it's funny. I just got I got hired by a new company back in November, and I know you mentioned earlier about the rarity in the private sector nowadays for pension funds and even 401ks a lot of the times and the matching that they offer.
Right.
This company gives me a pension and a 401k and will give me full health benefits. So I think it's kind of it's an extreme rarity when it comes to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing in terms of trends going forward for private sector companies to maybe even get rid of pension systems that they have in place now?
Well, yeah, as I stated before, most corporate America getting rid of the defined benefit pension plans. They're all going 401k right now.
Yeah.
And the good thing about 401k, if you invest it wisely, you diversify, don't try to time the markets, and there's been statistics, by the way, if you miss like just the top two or three high points in the market, right, by pulling out, trying to time the market, it can affect your return by an astronomical amount, a percentage. But most of them are going 401ks, and the money will always be there if you invest it wisely when you retire. Now, if you're a defined benefit, the money's no longer there when you die. I mean, your spouse, if you're married, will get a portion of it. But you stop, you die, and your pension stops. So the 401k will always be there where you can leave it to your children as well. So there's some good things about a 401k, and there's some bad things. It all depends on education. You have to invest your money wisely. And there's a formula I put in there when you read in the end of the book. I compared defined benefit versus defined contribution as what the typical person, if they retire at 65, would get paid out, what they paid into the system versus what they get in the end.
Now, you mentioned earlier also about riding the market out, and obviously in 2007 and 2008, as you mentioned before, we also saw a huge crash. People were devastated because they lost all their investment money in these, you know,
I think
funds.
Joe's going to steal my question, but go ahead, Joe.
Yeah.
If those people, though, had waited out the market until today, you would have rode right through the storm.
Well, I highlight an example. I had the good fortune and pleasure of running the $5 billion mass pension system. You probably don't remember, but back in October of 87, they called it Black Monday, and it was the largest crash in the history of the financial markets. The Dow Jones dropped over 508 points. Now, we had prudently invested, and you had your big blue-chip companies, S&P companies like Chrysler, U.S. Steel. They were trading in the high 90s. They dropped to single digits. So people panicked, sold everything they had at tremendous losses after incurring these profits for years. What we did, we went right back and purchased those stocks, and so did their company. They bought their own stocks back at tremendous values. And 3 to 4, 5 years, the full market cycle, they came back and doubled that. So that's a classic example when I talk about there's four fundamentals that I list there, the steps of investing.
Joe was actually womb watching that day when the market crashed.
No, it's funny. My mom was in the financial markets before I was born, which Kevin was right. I was born in 88. She was involved in the investment marketplace and was there literally calling in or helping people make trades that day. Right. and saw was part of the crash on that Monday, and she talks about it to this day.
I'll tell you one thing, a lot of financial brokers made a ton of money.
Yeah.
A lot of trades happened.
Yeah.
I think we just got a couple of minutes left here, and again, it's been great talking with you about your book.
Well, thank you for
In God We Trust, the investment business, not so much. Where can folks get this if they want to come up with
They
this?
Can get it right now on Amazon.com. Okay. It's available in soft paperback cover for, I believe it's listed now, for $8.50 a book. And you can also go on KDP Kindle. Amazon.com and get it downloaded for like $2.95 a copy.
Very nice. Very nice. So what I want to ask you to kind of wrap this up, we've seen over the past week that the Dow Jones Industrial has been up. I think it's ahead. It broke 1,800 or it's
all-time highs.
It's all-time high so far. Yeah. Where's this industry heading? And
today it was down 24.
Oh, so it's down. Okay, but it's still.
Yeah, it's still...
It's been doing well the past couple of weeks.
My take on this, the reason you have contrarian viewpoints, you have someone saying where it's going to go, but I think personally the domestic equity market in this country is tremendously overvalued. The only reason it's returning good returns is the interest rates are so low, so people will not put their money in bonds. Emerging market equity, there's tremendous value overseas. These companies are way undervalued. The labor force is real cheap. There's tremendous profits to be made overseas. But I think you're going to see a market correction. It might not be to the end of the year, but I think the U.S. market.
Do you think that's what's going to need to change moving forward, that there needs to be some kind of a correction?
Right. Again, yeah, corrections can be good, but it also, back to the asset allocation, you can't get away from 90% of your funds return. Your investment return comes from where your asset class is. The more diversified you are, the more chances you're going to meet your investment target return. So if it does correct the equity market, you won't get hurt as much as someone 100% in that. So maybe you have 25% of your portfolio in that, and some in REITs, real estate, investment trusts, some in bonds, you know, some in hedge funds and real estate. So you're protected if there is a crash.
Very nice.
What gold is a great investment now, by the way. There's still tremendous upside because
precious
stop
metals?
And think.
You're saying go buy precious metals like
precious
gold and silver?
Gold has still tremendous upside, I think. And
even though it's so high right now or considered?
And years ago, I point out, it's still a good way to go, I think. And keep in mind now, years ago, supposedly, the government could not print any more money than's backed up by gold, but
we're not on the gold standard anymore.
Right, that's been out for years now, and there used to be an inverse relationship between stocks and bonds. When stocks were up, bonds were down. Not anymore. It's crazy times. Just sound investment diversification. Stick to your investment horizons, and go from there, gentlemen.
Frequently asked question. What is the frequently asked question? Anybody who approaches you about investing?
What questions they ask?
What is probably the most asked question?
Where they put their money? Where should we put our money? Right. And should we trust the markets? And there's your answer. And God, yes, the investment markets, not so much.
Now, I do want to mention that I believe the last time you were here,
right,
you were running for office.
Yes, it was Council Ward 7. That's had to remind me of that.
Is there a chance that you might throw your hat in the ring? Or are you going to stick to the...
I'll stick to my business. Investing. I start a new construction company and go from there. I think I've had my share of running for office. I'm still serve on several committees. I'm involved with my own city government.
Okay.
And did my share working for the state and helping people's pensions, so I moved on, and now I'm gearing towards the private sector and my own business. Build that up.
Watching any races? Do you any races that you'll be watching this fall?
Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens in Brockton. I don't know of anyone running for mayor right now. I'm hearing rumors on the street, and a few people might run, but it should be an interesting year.
Really? Okay. Well, we know the mayor will announce probably early March.
Yep.
Probably the next 2 weeks, he'll have a kickoff.
Running again, yep. I already got an invitation.
Did you really?
Down to Joe Angelo's, right?
Very nice.
Yep.
Very nice. Anything in closing?
Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I enjoy coming on your show, and thank you. And once again, the book, In God We Trust, The Investment Business, Not So Much. Hopefully I'll help some college students out there, or anyone entertaining the idea of pursuing a career in the investment business, what it's about before. I wish I had read this book before I got into it. I know a lot more than I did when I did back then.
Here he is, Dick Zaccaro. Dick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks again.
That's another one in the books. Until next week at
Amazon.com.
That's right, for his book. Next week at 6:15. That's all we got here on Monday Night Talk. Right, Joe?
That's right. Good night.